You know, when I have gamer subs, it's easy to lose track of time myself because it's got that smooth release, it lasts so long, and there's no nasty sudden crash, so all of a sudden you just realise, ah, that's been a few hours. Actually, that worked out, didn't it? That little energy release. This is one of my favourite flavours, citrus lemonade. If you want to try it, use the code THORIN, THORIN, at gamersubs.gg for 10% off your order. Now, the esports industry, as it has expanded, as it has taken on more money, more funding, especially VC, venture capital, as it's become more corporate, as big business has become more part of it, has to deal with big business around the world, as it quite frankly becomes integrated into the wider world of business, of media, of the general finance world, etc. It's quite frankly lost track of its core identity of who are the esports players, the fans, the people who make up esports. And you'll see that in how it deals with time. So if we go to like tournaments, for example, the very lifeblood of esports, the competitions that we need, the very sports esports that we're all covering, that everything else is based around and revolves around, right? So you look at these tournaments, and I'm not exaggerating, from day one in esports, but I'm even more so in the modern day when it's an enormous field, they still, and this continues to this day, to have matches early local time in the morning. So you have professional players playing matches at 10 a.m. local time. You have fans expected to watch matches, if they're in the local time zone, at 10 in the morning. Now, the exception of when this makes sense, and I don't have any issue with it, is say you were doing like a League of Legends tournament, and you were doing the tournament in, pick some country that's not that big for League of Legends, and the main time zone, in terms of the people who are going to view the tournament, is like one of the Chinese time zones or where Korea is. Yeah, it might make sense then to shift the time zone to cater to the main audience. But the reason I bring this up is this. Gamers stay up late as part of their culture. That's who they are as people. They're people who spend most of their time playing video games, procrastinating playing video games, staying up late playing video games, not going to bed early when they should. People all know these issues that are part of it. It's probably, I'm sure there's even people who play video games when they feel like they can't go to sleep and they have another game of this and then I'll go. So to me, that's just baked into the culture of gaming, of esports and of hardcore games. If you ever met a pro gamer, look, now they might be drilled by some of the teams they've been in, but they're the sort of person who's up at 3 a.m. of course. You try calling that guy 9 or 10 a.m. when he's not at an event, he's not going to answer the phone. He's not going to be up at that point in time. There are the rare exceptions, the Cloud9s and League of Legends I've heard have to wake up at a certain time and go to that stuff. Those scenes, you notice they're based around a set league schedule. You don't have tournaments every week and every month. In games like Counter-Strike, they get back home, these guys just become gamers again. But the tournaments aren't like, the tournament settings different. Well, remember, just as when you travel, you need something, like I think someone said, to do it properly, you need a day for every hour of jet lag you want to get rid of. So already, if you come from Europe and you're coming with only like 1 or 2 days to spare to America, you're already going to be jet lagged. Add into that, what if at home you wake up 2 p.m. in the afternoon or midday and now you have to play a game that you're already suffering 4 or 5 hours of jet lag, and then you've got a couple of hours where you would have been sleeping and it wouldn't have worked out for you even if it had been local time. So again, we're not exactly getting the best performance level out of the players here. We're certainly not watching the game at the most appropriate, most appealing time necessarily, but this is the way things are done right now with the schedules and the margins and the real world demands that we have. Then you consider the companies in esports, the orgs, the media outlets, the tournament organizers themselves. If you knew how many of these companies essentially are just real world companies now and not like esports companies, it'd blow your mind. Like basically so many companies now run around office hours, as in local time, 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. right? The joke is, as I just alluded to with gamers, you'll only have had like 2 or 3 hours that the gamers were up by the time that you'll be able to talk to them. Already when they message you, it'll be going into an inbox. You'll be at home with your wife and kids or whatever, because many of them are living the 9-to-5 lifestyle. You won't be replying to that message. And all your messages early in the day, it's wasted time. They have to wake up to see it. You're not going to get many. You're going to get back and forth, are you? Like, this is why, actually, one of the reasons I was annoyed with the fact that Flashpoint never ended up getting any good teams in CSGO. Because if we'd have had any comparable weapons, not as good, but just like a couple of good teams to work with, we could have tooled ESL in terms of PR. Because the difference is, I could just do a tweet like that when I have the info in whatever way I want to on my Twitter. ESL had to go back, have a meeting. So if I did this on Friday night, they have to wait till Monday and then call a meeting and then have someone there with the PR person and maybe even a lawyer. And then let's all craft our messaging around them. What are we going to do here? And how would it go? In the meantime, I could have done two or three replies, posts, tweets, more things, could keep pushing those buttons and they'd just be behind me permanently. The mobility that I had was insane compared to them. How about this? Because, as I just said, they work office hours. It's not just that they're up earlier than you. The worst is you message someone something at 9 p.m. that's important, but it needs to be done within the next 5 to 6 hours. Sometimes they won't reply to you the next day because they're not in the office. They're at home and they're having a healthy work-life balance. And so they're like reading to their kid or watching a movie with their wife or going for a walk with their dog or something. They're not reading your email. They're not doing that. Now, I'm not saying don't have a healthy work-life balance. Have people who are staff who follow these things through the day. Have people during main gaming hours. And then have your other staff on the other ones that have to work in the real life office and work with the companies local to your area. Yes, of course. My question is why it would just be ignored. This is the traditional normal way that gaming stuff is done through the night, not at 11 a.m. local time, believe it or not. That's ridiculous to even imply as much. Then the worst for me, like I alluded to with the ESL example, are the people where you can't get in contact with them over the weekend. Now, look, the super-duper high-level top people at the top of these orgs are the ones that come from a gaming background. Yes, of course, if I message them a Twitter DM, they're going to reply. But I'm talking about as companies. Again, good luck getting like something over the weekend or some reply on something on a Saturday when you message them on a Friday and maybe you need it on Sunday. You have to hope someone's available who sees that or is still checking stuff or who doesn't work office hours. The craziest to me, by the way, I've had this happen many times. It's just luckily I'm at the status where I can say I'm not going to do that unless I want to. So you have to shift yours to me. But I can't imagine what up-and-coming people in the industry must be like. Because you know how many companies are working local time office hours, but they're based in LA, so they're PST. And then they're dealing with people like in Europe, for example, like Central European time zone. That's 9 hours difference. As in, for you to do your meeting at 12 p.m. during your office hours, that's 9 p.m. already for the person in Europe. Like, here's the thing. That vaguely works in that regard. But you can see how the person in Europe is the one who has to accommodate you, even if it's later in the day. Think how many times that's just not going to work for some time zones. And this is the way a lot of people read it. Well, you know, I wouldn't want to take my whole work home from the office. It's crazy. Like, another reason this doesn't work for me is this. I get that now it is a bigger industry and a lot of these essentially are real world businesses that happens that the theme is esports. They're not just like bedroom companies anymore. I get that. But one of the reasons I find this so crazy overall is because I think to myself, what actually are these companies supposed to represent in terms of what is their culture? Who are the people who make up their company? Are these the hours they would all want to work? Is this actually, do you have to do it that way to have the respect from the other business people? Is there no way this can be done within esports? Like, this is how esports is done. That's the part I find weird. Same with contracts, by the way. Like, teams will sign contracts and deals. Like, this was sports. Like, there's not going to be some meta swap that'll just cripple your best player. Like, there's not going to be some drop-off of form of that young 18-year-old superstar who's just been good for 3 months. Like, you can't just go from best player in the world to 50th 6 months later. We could do that all the time in esports games and vice versa. I mean, I've made the point previously when it comes to, like, players and how they think of things and about how a year is worth more than a year. Because pros even do this. Pros will waste an extra year not knowing, like, bro, if you even have, like, 3 or 4 year career where you're at peak level, you are one of the greatest players ever to play CSGO. 1 or 2 years might be your whole career peak. Go ask someone like Olofmeister. I mean, even some of the legends of the game only get 3 or 4 years as a really, really good player. And you're just burning a whole year sticking with a guy who's a questionable teammate or doubling down on a lineup that like did something, but it's already hit its apex or its zenith. It's never going to get higher again, but you're just going to double down for another year. Like, I always think one of the angles that shows me that Astralis weren't geniuses is the players or the org in terms of like knowing who it was. They didn't want fucking Magus guys. They wanted Kirby to sign again for like 2 years or something. And they were just going to run back the lineup from 2017 that by this point in time wasn't winning anything. Hadn't won something for months. I'm talking like 8, 9 months at this point in time. They hadn't won anything. And they were going to double down on that lineup. They got lucky that Kirby went to North and then Config fucked up the interview and then Magus happened to be available. By the way, can you even imagine any other version of Astralis without Magus now? Sure, it could have been amazing with Config. Would be a lot more questionable. All right, by the way, I think it would be terrible with Kirby. It ended up being amazing with him. Imagine they'd won 2 years. By the way, think about it. We're talking like spring of 2018. That means that lineup, in terms of the contracts, would have been done in 2020. There would be no Prime Australis. There would be no Peak Australis. There would be no Era, no Grand Slam, no majors, no back-to-back. There would have been nothing. There might have just been that one original major for all we know. Who knows how CS would be different? Then how about the whole thing of like, let's all do a last dance. Last dance, guys, again, a year is like people's entire peak. If your team's already washed, you're going to bring them back together and put us through another year of that. It's too much of your career. It's too much of other people's careers. It's not worth it. It's just a waste. And if you knew how many top pros now who are washed, by the way, look at that Imperial team and like, hey, we should do whatever. It's not just the ones saying it in public. There's a whole bunch behind the scenes have implied it. And then some of them want to do it. It's just luckily there aren't a lot of orgs that want to blow their money for no good reason on a team that will not do anything. Remember, Imperial comes fucking last place at tournaments, for fuck's sake. Then how about the whole thing about where players complain like, oh, don't have to attend this event, but that's like the 1 year of their career. Little do they know that they're going to be at the top of the scene, they could win the tournaments. If you knew that in 2 years you're never even going to be in a final, you're going to go out in like second to last place, you'd attend that bloody ESL1 Cologne, wouldn't you? Remember, beggars can't be choosers. The problem here is because you think you're at the top of the game. Again, you think you're Neymar and you're going to have a 20-year career. You aren't, mate. You're just a flash in the pan because esports is, and your esports game might only last 10 years. And then within that, you think you're going to get 10 years. You'll probably get two or three. If you get five or six and you're even vaguely tier one, count yourself lucky, mate. Consider yourself someone who should be grateful for what they were given and were able to carve out in life. Because the reason this is all so sad to me generally, it's not a big deal. This isn't like the end of the world or whatever. I just find it's one of those areas where there's no real place where esports is informed by itself and where esports came from. It's always the other way around. Like I always used to say, this is even before I knew people like Richard, but I've said it many, many times on By the Numbers. The most disappointing thing about esports, really, was that as it got big, early on, it was all the esports fuckers like constantly like, oh, please, Mr. Mainstream, please come get in on the mainstream anyway. Is it? Oh my God, an interview with the mainstream. Oh my goodness, validation from the mainstream. Right, yes, that was happening at the beginning. But the point you should have been able to see is we could never force our way into the mainstream. If we were just weirdos, they wouldn't have accepted us. But once they started to get interested, once they saw, hey, there's something here, like, this could become something one day. Oh, we could invest money here one day. Oh, the viewership's gone up here. The soon as we had their invitation, and interest rather, that was the moment where you say to the people who are coming in from the outside of esports, welcome to esports. We'd like you to come into our space as long as you integrate with us, accept some of our culture, some of our values, cater to us, and then we'll happily cooperate and work with you and be part of the mainstream. But no, instead of them becoming like us and our culture and esports culture, we became like them. We became like their culture, our esports culture just became their culture, and hence why esports itself is just a nightmare of libtard values. It's just nonsense. You can't even drill down and find anything beneath it. It's not even from this scene, and therefore it's just slogans repeated from outside of the space. Sadly, we became the worst elements of the mainstream because we adapted to fit the mainstream. We could have said to the mainstream, only the best elements of the mainstream can come into esports, and that way we will harness a different type of a space with a different culture, with different values, with different types of people. And you know what? When you come into our space, yes, there are certain people we protect, but you know what? There are also other people we protect because they were here as well. And we want everyone to be able to have a chance in esports. And as long as you're not malicious and you're not out to hurt people and do horrible things and steal and do crime, then you can be a part of the space, can't you? But we didn't do that, did we? We made it like every other pleb space where like saying things are inclusion and that, they're just like code words for like exclude this person. Don't allow many different types of people, only the ones who believe this, this and this. Like that's what we did instead. We had a chance to remake the world in our image, and instead what did you do? You hoard yourself out for money, fame and validation like every other two-bit hussy pastime.
Machine here, and you're watching Thorin's YouTube channel. 20 minute video for 2 minutes worth of content. Gold.
This video was supported by Kill Your Inner Loser, Travis Goff, Ahmed Haju, Matt Pugnaccio Rakula, Hades, Animosity, Joseph Ginsburg, Tobias Bernasconi, Buttpounder 420, Jensen Gore, Kovacevic, Pacey, Tosh, Adamox, Toucan, and a special thanks always goes out to Jerky's Minion. Would you like to suggest a topic or a guest for my content? You want to ask me a question at one of my monthly AMAs? Do you want teasers, find out who the upcoming guests are? Or maybe you want to take part in one of those lengthy esports discussions with moi? Well, if so, put your money where your mouth is. Join the Scrilluminati today via the Patreon link in the description box below.